This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, good morning and welcome to The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. I am Dean Holland, her aiding and abetting Batman sort of kind of guy in the garden. How are you this morning, Charlie?
I'm great. I like the way we synchronize our dancing as for the intro music. That's very cool.
Well, you know what? You got me onto that. I think, you know, it was something that you and Frank must have done. So
I think I'd just do it. It just gets me. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's one of those things, right?
Yeah. Well, it is. We do the little dance in the morning. Yeah. Because you've been doing this. How long have you been doing the show now, Charlie?
Ooh, I think I've completely lost track. I think we're at year 15.
Year 15.
I can look that up. I think so.
Wow. And I am approaching the end of my very first year with you. I'm coming upon my anniversary date here on Zoomer. It's coming up in a couple of weeks. Yeah.
Oh, very cool. Well, speaking of a couple of weeks, just before you do the numbers, I just want to give everybody a heads up.
Yeah.
I know I'm not asking for your sympathy, but I do need people to please work with me on this. As everybody knows, I've been hosting a series, a documentary series called Healing Gardens. It has aired on Vision TV, 10 episodes, which are they will be rerunning all winter on Vision TV. But we're also producing more episodes. So I'm off to Hawaii this Thursday to make another episode of Healing Gardens on the island of Kauai, which is also known as the Garden Island. And I'm totally looking forward to this. It's going to be very exciting. But it means that we will not be able to do the radio show next Saturday or the Saturday after live. I thought I could. I thought, I'll just do it from Hawaii. But as it turns out, when it's 9 a.m. here in Ontario, it's 3 a.m. in Hawaii. So no way. Sorry, not doing it. So we will be in reruns. The next two Saturdays, just so everybody knows, will be repeats. But then I'll be back and we'll be back live in 3 weeks from today. But for the next 2 weeks, we will be doing repeats.
Gotcha. And I don't know if you can see from here, because, of course, I'm in my Collingwood studio and you are in your Prince Edward County studio. But I am not feeling sorry for you whatsoever. So.
I know. When I tell people, it's like, I know you're going to hate me when I say this. Yeah. This is what's happening. And it's like, oh, I totally hate you. Or they want to carry my luggage, one or the other.
Yeah, fair enough. And, you know, you'd maybe bring me back a grass skirt or something, you know, just, you know.
or a flower necklace.
How about maybe some Kona coffee? Will they let you bring coffee back?
Yes,
I think so, because that actually, very seriously, my wife and I are both coffee drinkers. We would like that. And that's something that grows, so that would be very appropriate.
That's right. And it's famous. Hawaii's famous for the Kona coffee.
Okay, there you go. Okay, I am going to give out the numbers now. Yeah, okay. if you have a question, and it can be an indoor gardening question or an outdoor gardening question, and we would love for you to call. And the number in Toronto is 416-360-0740, or toll-free anywhere in the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. And please let Carlos know, who is our operator, and he will be fielding the calls. Please let him know if you are a first-time caller, and I'll give you these garden wings. And of course, we want you to call often. We love you to call early, and please, 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 one question per call. Okay, so with that, we will take our first break, and we will be back with much more right here on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, we are back here on The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. I'm Dean Holland, and it is the season for bulb planting, isn't it, Charlie?
It is. Well, it is. I mean, you got to plant them now. If you don't plant them now, the ground will freeze, and then you can't plant them.
Right, so, of course.
Absolutely. If you've purchased bulbs, which many of us have,
yes,
that's got to be on the agenda. And, you know, it's we were hurting for rain here for the last couple of weeks. Now, suddenly, we're starting to get some rain. So, even right now, my sky has just darkened. We do have some rain coming this morning. But tomorrow looks gorgeous. Tomorrow is going to be clear and sunny at my place, and then rain for the rest of the week. So, you know what I'm doing tomorrow.
Yeah, I think we have planned to do some of our bulbs this weekend as well. So today / tomorrow. Tomorrow might be the better day.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Depending on what's going on where you are.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so we will talk bulbs a little bit throughout the episode. But right now, let's go to our first caller. We have Mary on the line from Hamilton. Good morning, Mary. Welcome to The Garden Show.
Thank you. And good morning to both of you. I'm calling, when you're talking about autumn planting, I'm afraid I have a plant that I should have planted last spring. I received the Northern Lights Forsythia, and it is still in its container.
That's fine. Don't worry. You can get it in the ground now. The rule of thumb when it comes to autumn planting is we try to get any new plants into the ground about or at least 6 weeks before the first hard frost. And, of course, we don't know when that is, but you've still got plenty of time. It's only the middle of October. The only reason we try to get plants in the ground 6 weeks before the first hard frost is because when we put a new plant into the ground, it's just sitting there. The roots will start to grow. Obviously, the soil is nice and warm, so the roots will start to grow. And if they are 6 weeks time for roots to get that plant a little bit established, the plant is less likely to be popped up out of the ground when the ground freezes, because that's something that will happen with late planted plants, is they will tend to get forced up out of the ground as the ground expands with the freezing.
Well, that's very helpful. And I wasn't sure if I should put it in the pot still, but you think I have enough time.
Oh, you definitely do. I mean, if you're not sure where it's going, then leave it in the pot and just bury it for the winter, dig it up in the spring and figure out where it's going. But if you know where it's going, get it out of the pot. And remember, there's going to be a lot of really tightly bound roots inside that pot. So loosen those up before you plant it.
Uh-huh. And should I put anything in the, when I dig the hole, any nutrients in there?
Some people like using a plant start fertilizer, which is it'll be called a transplanter or a plant start. It'll have a high middle number of the three numbers, so 5, 15, 5, or 10, 52, 10. Uh-huh. These are all plant start fertilizers. Many people like to use something like that just to give it a little boost of phosphorus, again, to encourage root growth.
Okay, that sounds very helpful. Thank you very much. Have a lovely weekend and a trip to Hawaii.
Thank you.
Yes, it's the feel sorry episode for Charlie Dauphin here on The Garden Show.
For me, 11 hours on a plane.
Yeah. Well, and that is tough for some people, for sure. Okay, going to give those numbers out again. Toronto, 416-360-0740, or toll free anywhere else in the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. And we have a first time caller on the line. We've got Bridget in Toronto. Good morning. Welcome to The Garden Show, Bridget.
Oh, hi. Thank you very much. My question
I just want to give you your garden wings there, my dear. One sec.
Oh, thank you.
There you go.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. My question is around transplanting. I have some cone flowers. These aren't the big, huge, tall, purple ones. They're the shorter ones, maybe 2 feet high, multicolored ones. And I want to transplant them from one part of the garden to another part in the same north-facing, but probably 10 feet away, because they're just, you can't see them because of, excuse me, my wild sunflowers. Is it a good time to transplant them now, or should I wait till the spring?
Okay, so I heard everything except what is the plant that you're wondering about?
It's the cone flowers. It's not the tall
purple one. Oh, cone flower.
One.
Okay, good.
It's the shorter.
Sweet. You know what? You could transplant now or in the spring, whichever works with your schedule. You heard me speaking to Mary, our first caller, just the importance of getting plants moved or planted in time so that some root growth will start to happen. And, you know, again, you're in Toronto 6 weeks from now. We probably won't have had a hard frost, you know, or we'll be close to it. So you're you're good to go as long as this, you know, your planting location has been prepared. You've got some, you know, amended the soil with some good organic matter. You've got water standing by because, of course, we water when we transplant or plant. And and so, yeah, I mean, if you want to do it this weekend, you can, or wait till the spring. Either one.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, thanks for the call there, Bridget.
Yeah, just so you know, Dean, one of the things people don't often realize, I've mentioned it a couple times, the soil is warm now. And because the soil is warm, it's been, you know, sun beating down all summer, that will encourage root growth very quickly. In the spring, when we transplant, the soil is very, very cold. So when we transplant, it does take a while for the soil to warm up, for then the roots to start to grow, for the plant to start to get established, which is why fall planting, just like fall, you know, grass seed, you know, overseeding our lawns, any of that in the fall is always most effective because of that warm soil.
Gotcha. I think I'm as guilty as anybody in forgetting that, because as soon as it gets cold outside, we think it's cold. But you're right. It's like bodies of water, right? Bodies of water take time to warm up
and to cool off.
Yes, it doesn't happen overnight.
No, and you're right. Like, now's the time we're kind of going, oh, it's fall, better hunker down, you know, put another log on the fire. And in the spring, we're like, ooh, let's get outside, let's get planting. So we kind of, our internal clock is opposite to what it should be.
Right. Okay, good. No, good reminder for sure. Okay, we have to take a little bit of a pause. We have to hear from some very important people, and we will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, we are back here on The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. I'm Dean Holland, and the conversation thus far today has been about a lot of fall planting and how we do that, okay? And so, but the conversation can be about anything gardening-wise, indoors or out. We would love for you to call us. 416-360-0740 is the Toronto number, or anywhere else in the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. Carlos is ready and will and able and eager to intercept your call, as he did a few minutes ago with for Julie in Toronto, who's been on the line. Welcome to The Garden Show, Julie.
Yes, good morning. I have a large bag of potting soil. It's called Miracle Grow and Moisture Control for indoors and outdoor plants. I might have bought it last year or maybe this spring, but I was about to use it just last week to repot some pots for bringing indoors, and I noticed like a white layer on the top, almost like mold. Now, is that okay to use?
So, was the bag open?
Yes.
From prior, yes.
Yes.
You know what? If it could be mold, depending on whether it was, that is packed dry. When you buy that potting soil, it's a fairly light bag because there's virtually no moisture in the bag. So there wouldn't be mold normally. But if you had wet it because you were using it in the past and then it's been sitting in a corner for a number of months or a year, then it is possible that some mold may have grown just from moisture being in the bag with the bag closed up.
But I haven't added any water to the bag.
No way. The other thing it can be, though it usually isn't, is a precipitation of salt. You know how sometimes if we don't transplant our plants, our indoor plants that are in pots, for years and years and years, we just keep watering and fertilizing and we never change the soil, eventually you'll get a white precipitate on the surface of the soil and on the outside of the pot in the case of a clay pot. And that is salt. So
bag, I haven't used it at all. I mean, I've opened it, but I haven't used it recently. But I noticed this white kind of layer on the top, and I assume it's mold, but I was wondering if it's safe to use for indoor pots.
Yeah, it is. So you could scrape off. Is it like a powdery white, like it's a dusty white, or does it look like an actual like fungus, something that's really kind of sticky and has body
to
it?
Not sticky, and it's not really powdery, but it's just a layer that's sitting, and not on the whole top, but sporadically.
So, you know what, just use a trowel and just scrape off the section that's got the white on it, and then just throw that out into the garden or onto the lawn, or it'll be fine outside. And I would carry on and use the bag. Miracle-Gro generally makes very well-designed potting mixes, so I wouldn't be concerned.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Charlie.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for calling.
Thanks for your call, though, Julie. Yeah, Miracle-Gro is, it's, I'm guessing it has all sorts of different things mixed in there. Are they different? Different, I don't know, what makes it the miracle?
Sorry. So Miracle-Gro, people know because of the fertilizer. Because your plants will grow like it's a miracle when you follow the instructions. And that's the blue powder we mix with water, right? So that's a water-soluble fertilizer. Scotts owns Miracle-Gro, and Scotts makes a lot of products for the garden. I mean, Turf Builder is one of the lawn fertilizers that many people know, made by Scotts. So they've really gotten into the potting soil business, as many companies have. All the potting mixes that are out there, believe it or not, they are, it's a recipe, and it's made, it's, they test, they fiddle and diddle till they get the perfect recipe, and then they make the soils. They're not really soils. They make these mixes by the recipe. So they're usually peat-based. Mm-hmm. There is no soil in them whatsoever, no like earth like we have in the ground. So it's peat moss, it's vermiculite, it's perlite. The moisture control part means there's probably something in there called coir, C-O-I-R, which is a coconut husk that's been ground down. And coconut husk and peat moss, any of the mosses, are great at holding moisture. So when you look out there and you're shopping for a soil to use on your indoor plants, it typically isn't the soil. It'll just say potting mix or container gardening, or, and then they get fancy and they'll do for vegetables, for herbs, for flowers, for trees, but they're all basically the same.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. So let's go to, we have another first time caller on the line. Yeah. We're going to Sonia in Aurora. Welcome to the Garden Show, Sonia.
Hi.
Hi. I got your garden wings for you.
Okay.
There you go.
Thank you.
What do you got for Charlie there?
I have clematises that I've been growing for many years. Something, I don't know what it is. We have a lot of mold around the yard. I don't know if that's what's cutting them down, but the minute I plant them, they cut down to the ground. And the ones that have bloomed, they still, for years, they still cut those down.
So an animal is cutting them down, you think?
Pardon?
Did you say they're cut down like an animal?
They're cut, they're like a, almost like you use a pair of scissors and just snap the vines.
Oh, that's weird. Okay. Clematis vines are very brittle, so there's no question that they will break if there's action. Like, could it be raccoons going through your yard, rubbing against them, causing the break?
I don't think so, because they're fenced in. Like, when I notice they've been cut down, we put fences around them, and I mean like fences, and pack the bottoms with whatever we can find so that they're protected. But you see the stems start drying up, the flowers start going off, and then you, when you pull from the root, you can see where the snaps are, where they have already cut them. Just like first we thought it was rabbits, but they can't get in there. Then we thought it was the raccoon, but they can't get in. But it's like everywhere I move them, you know, they are cut down the next day or two.
That's a puzzle. I'm not sure.
Same here, because I went to the nursery and questioned them. They have no clue what could be doing that.
Right. Yeah. You know what you need? You need one of those motion detector cameras that they use it for wildlife photography, particularly in, you know, the forest and Africa and stuff, so that when something comes into your yard, the camera will turn on and you can see what's going on. There's really the one thing that happens to clematis is a disease, and where one day the plant looks great and then the next day all the leaves are hanging and completely wilted, and it's, the disease is called clematis wilt. And it's something that enters from the soil into the plant and causes complete, it'll actually ultimately often kill the plant just because it's a fungal disease that gets inside the plant. So it can be an issue, but that's really all that gets clematis.
But that's not happening. These are like just taking a pair of scissors and cut them, like just sharp pair that's of just cuts.
Crazy. Never heard of such a thing. there are insects called cutworms, but they would never cut a clematis vine because it's too tough for them. They only go for really soft stems, and they do cut off at ground level, but cutworms are little like larva caterpillars, and like I said, they wouldn't touch the clematis. Groundhogs, gophers, voles.
That's what I was trying to find out. Could it possibly be mold? Because we see them just crawling around the place.
Okay.
And then you can literally see where the blossoms or the leaves start just, and then when you start browning, and then when you pull from the to see what's going on, it's actually a cut. Just the stems are cut.
Okay, so moles are not vegetarians. You'll find moles in your garden when you have grubs in the ground or earthworms or something that they like to eat because they are carnivorous.
Okay.
Voles are vegetarians, and they will certainly, you'll know you have voles because you will see little tracks and trails, usually they just keep walking in the same places, so you'll see the little trails. But they will definitely chew the bark on trees and perhaps chew the stems of clematis.
Oh, how do I get rid of them, Charlie?
Cats, dog. Do you have a pet? You need a cat or a dog? Like an outdoor cat or an outdoor dog, because that's a great deterrent. I would try if I were you? Something that I use on my plants to deter deer, and this is a spray that we spray on any plants to deter anything that might chew our plants. Okay. And it's called Plant Skid. And you can buy
Plant Skid?
P-L-A-N-T, plant. And then Skid, S as in Sam,
okay.
K as in kite,
okay.
Y as in yellow,
okay.
D as in dog, and D as in dog. So Plant Skid, you can buy it at any garden center or any, Canadian Tire will have it as well. So Plant Skid, you mix it with water, follow the instructions. I bet you'll find that you will have less damage on those clematis. And you'll spray now in the fall, and you'll spray again next spring when the plants start to grow.
I appreciate your help, and thank you so much, and have a good weekend.
Thank you, Sonia. Okay. Wow, I felt like we went down a rabbit hole there. Holy cow, we're talking about scissors and or a vole hole. And speaking of which, you got a rather amusing email from Wayne, who said, I have a mole problem and I'm looking for a solution. He says, in my lawn, not on my body. So since we're talking about moles and voles, what do you got for us, Charlie?
Okay, so what I can tell you is what I was sort of saying there to Sonia. Moles are... They look quite a bit like a mouse, except they're darker in color, and they have a long nose, and they're virtually blind. They have tiny, tiny eyes. They have big feet because they tunnel into the ground. They are interesting little creatures because when you've got moles on your property, as I mentioned earlier, it means you've got insects in your soil that the moles want to eat. They are insectivores. So they don't eat plants, but they can kill plants coincidentally while they're digging around, digging up grubs or earthworms or anything, and along the way they can end up digging up plants. Moles are tough to kill. They typically will not take bait because they're so specifically want insects. So people will try baits. Rarely does that seem to work. Trapping can work, but you have to put the traps down into the tunnels. So there are extensive networks of tunnels which are made. The good thing about moles, though, is they don't travel in groups. They live alone. And usually if you've got a whole bunch of damage, you'll think you've got a whole bunch of moles, but you probably only have one. But as it winter comes on, the moles are going to dig deeper down into the ground. So they want to get below the frost line for the winter because they do not hibernate. They don't go to sleep. They stay active year round. So, trapping, even hiring a pest control company to do the trapping for you because they have access to more effective traps and better baits than we do when it comes to trapping or, you know, getting rid of varmints. Cats and dogs are handy, very handy for discouraging moles and voles. And other than that, believe it or not, castor oil is a really big deal when it comes to moles. For some reason, there's this whole thing about if you use... Right, so castor oil, you can make, it's kind of a crazy remedy. So it's three parts castor oil, one part dish soap, and water mixed together, and then you spray that into the, any like into the holes, into the tunnels. You spray it on your lawn. You want to make whatever this animal is eating very disgusting to the animal, and it will stop eating and hopefully go to your neighbors.
Go to your, that's great.
You know, you're not going to kill all these little varmints. You just have to drive them off the property.
Yeah, you got it. Okay, so there you go. That's for Wayne and for Sonia. Now we're going to go to Sophie in Hamilton. Welcome to the Garden Show, Sophie.
Thank you to both of you. Thank you so much. Charlie, I have a lilac tree in a pot. The pot is 1 foot high and 4 feet around the diameter. I want to know if it'll survive over the winter in the pot, and what can I do?
Wow. What's the pot made out of?
It's the ordinary, the plastic stuff that pots are come in.
Okay, so you said it's 1 foot high by 4 feet wide?
Yes.
That's a weird shape.
The diameter around, as I measured it with my tape, it measures 4 feet around.
But very low. It's a very shallow pot.
Yes.
I would say no. It's unlikely to survive in such a shallow plastic pot. If you want to keep it potted, like if that's your goal is to have this as a potted ornamental plant in your on your property, I would get a larger pot, like deeper. The 4 feet wide is huge, but the depth needs to be deeper. And remember the way plants, what kind, when you say lilac tree, it's an actual lilac. Do you know what kind of lilac?
It's an actual lilac tree. I haven't had a chance to plant it yet, so I'm wondering, I'm hoping it'll survive over the winter in a pot.
Well, you know what, then can you bury the pot for the winter? It will survive if you can get it underground for the winter, and then in the spring, figure out where it's really going, and then plant it in its permanent location.
Uh-huh. And is that the only way? Can I not put any leaves or any straw or anything around it so I can actually keep it warm?
Okay, so depending on where this, how your house is situated. For a plant to survive above ground in a pot, even a hardy plant like a lilac, to survive above ground in a pot, you have to put it out of the wind. So you need to put it in an eastern location, so no wind. You also want to avoid sun. So again, eastern location is just a bit of morning sun, but no sun, no wind. Water thoroughly as the ground, as we're freezing up, so that it's like an ice cube in that pot. And I have had situations where I do green garbage bags full of leaves, you're right, like dried leaves, and then I just stack the garbage bags around the plant for the winter. You could get yourself a couple of straw bales, put straw bales around the pot and the plant for the winter. Sometimes people will use old blankets or burlap. You're not so much keeping it warm. What you want to do is you want to trap air around the plant, which will help insulate the plant from extreme cold. Because we will get cold this winter. We'll get some nighttime temperatures that'll go 10 or 20 below zero, and that's what will kill the plant if it is subjected to extreme cold.
Okay, so that's my best route is by planting it in the ground. Okay.
Yeah, just leave it in the pot. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much, Charlie.
Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for the call there, Sophie. Charlie, just because you said out of the sun, out of the wind, would a garden shed be somewhere you could put it, or is that too dark?
Well, no, it's a good point. Once a plant is dormant, so in the case of a lilac, we've had a hard, once we have a hard frost, all the leaves drop off. It is nice and frozen because you've kept that pot watered, and of course there's drainage holes, so it's not sitting in a pool of water. You're right. You could tuck it away into an unheated garage or shed or whatever, which would help with some of those temperature extremes. So yeah, that's potentially a good idea too.
Okay, fair enough. We have to take another pause. We have some important messages to get to. We will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, we are back here on The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio. The number is to call in Toronto, 416-360-0740. Or anywhere else in the province of Ontario, including Hamilton, apparently, because it's been the Hamilton show today. 1-866-740-4740. And we have Rosalie on the line from Hamilton. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. I have a question about garlic. I know it's getting to the time for planting. When is the best time to plant? Like, we have rain today, so obviously not today. So what do you suggest about the garlic and planting?
I suggest you plant it tomorrow. If you can. It's in where we live in southern Ontario, mid-October is the optimal time to get garlic into the ground.
Okay. See, we've had such, Hamilton right now, it's raining. So obviously, if the ground's a little wet, is that okay to still plant, or it should not be saturated?
It's fine. I mean, the reason we avoid working in really saturated soil is because we can cause compaction.
Yep.
That is not a good idea.
Okay.
So, you know, see how your week is going, how your temperatures and forecasts are going.
Okay.
You really have any time in the next 2 weeks. I would try for sure to get it into the ground before the 1st of November.
Okay. Probably within the next few days, if the weather cooperates and it's sort of, the ground dries up somewhat, we should be okay to go.
Exactly. To just get past the saturation point to the moist point would be the best and get the garlic in the ground. But, you know, if your soil is well workable, what we call a friable soil that you can very simply use a bulb planter or a trowel and just open a hole, it's your body that's going to do the compaction more than anything.
Right.
If you can work from the lawn or the walkway into a garden, it would be quite simple to just get, you know, open up a spot, drop the little garlic clove in, and you know you're only dropping them down 3-4 inches anyway, so and then just cover with your hands, firm with your hands, and go to the next one.
Okay, great, thank you. And just an aside, when we did pulled our garlic last, harvested it this year, it was interesting because some plants had turned more brown than others, so it was kind of an interesting year this year.
I think that was the drought.
Yeah, it was just sort of strange. But the bulbs are fine, but I just want to share that with you. So thank you so much. In the next few days, we'll be getting the garlic in the ground.
Good stuff.
Great.
Thanks for calling.
Have a great day.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, wow. Let's talk about garlic. I recall you saying, Charlie, that you sometimes plant garlic interspersed into other stuff. Is that right?
Well, I tried it last year for the first time where I specifically planted garlic around my roses. And I was doing it as a companion planting idea. We've all read and heard that garlic is a great repellent of insects like aphids. And so if you plant garlic near plants that are often attacked by aphids, garlic should protect the plants. And I've read that, and it's one of those anecdotal things I've read many, many times. So I thought I'd try it, and I can speak very positively that I did experience very aphid-free roses this year. So what I've done now, because you never want to keep planting your garlic in the same spot, you'll find that your crop will get smaller and smaller and smaller. Mm. So this year I'm going to move the garlic to a different spot, but I've planted garlic chives in the area of my roses now. So I'm hoping that will act like garlic, the garlic chives, and then I will be popping my garlic into the ground. And yeah, that's really, I'm glad Rosalie asked that question. I'm sitting here going, oh yeah, I have to get that done too. My list is long.
Yeah, mine as well. Yeah. Okay. It looks like I'm going, I think, to Scarborough. Looks like we're going to Diana. Yeah. Okay. Welcome to the Garden Show, Diana.
Oh, thank you very much. And good morning to you both. I have a question about succulents. In my
planters that I have outside on windowsills, I decided to put succulents in this year. And I was they're annuals. I can see by the tags that they're annuals. And one of them is called something like Echeveria and Cressula and Della Sperma. And they're doing really, right now, they're doing wonderfully. But I was wondering, is there any way I can bring them in for next year, or should I just treat them as a regular annual, put them in the composter and start again next year?
If you can, I would bring them in. You probably spent quite a bit of money on those plants.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, so they're in. The planter that's outside is like a big, heavy planter. Can you bring that in or no?
Well, they're the window kind, you know, about foot and a half long and narrow.
So the succulents loved it because it was sunny and it was hot and it was well drained. And that's exactly what they're looking for. You know what? Depending on how many plants and, you know, how big all this is, if you can't bring in the planter they're in, then I would go to my local garden center. I'd buy some clay pots.
Okay.
You'd probably want 6-inch pots or 4-inch pots, because you don't want a pot too big. And you're going to just go out to this window box planter with a sharp trowel, and you're going to dig out each plant individually. So depending, how big they are, like I said, they never have huge roots, but they do prefer a well-drained, clay planters, the terracotta pots are the best when it comes to cactus and succulents. And then you've got to have a sunny spot inside your house where you're going to end up placing these for the winter. And you're only going to water, once a month, every 3 weeks or so. You're going to really underwater and let them just do their thing in your home. And then you'll be ready to go next spring to go back outside with them.
Oh, great. That sounds good. Should I use a cactus or a succulent soil, or just a good soil?
If you can get cactus oil, I would recommend it. It's virtually the same as any regular potting mix, but it does have it has fine gravel or sand in it, which contributes to it being even better drained than the average. Because, you don't want these plants sitting in soggy soil. So the cactus oil will drain out even better.
Okay. I very much
Good
appreciate
luck.
It. Thank you very much. I will give it a shot. Thank you so much.
All righty. Fabulous.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for the call there, Diana. Going to take a pause for some important messages. We'll be back with more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, we are in the home stretch here on The Garden Show before Charlie Dobbin jumps on a plane and goes to Hawaii.
Not yet. I have to plant my garlic, and I have some bulbs and discounted perennials at my local garden center.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I didn't resist. I mean, I have so many gardens here, and I have never – it's only been 2 years. So trees came first, and now it's a slow process of adding in perennials and shrubbery, because partially the cost, but also the water. Yep. I just don't have unlimited water. So I got my work cut out for me.
Yeah, and I also like to buy those discounted perennials too. I bought about a month ago a foxglove that I put in the garden, and it seems to be doing very, very well, so I'm excited about that coming up in the spring for sure. Yeah. Okay, here we go. We have a few more callers on the line. Kathy in Niagara Falls. What do you got for Charlie there, Kathy?
Yes, I just wonder about wintering ferns. I have two beautiful ferns, and I just hate to have them die on me. And last year, I kept them in an apartment that I wasn't renting, and I had them in the bathtub so I could water them all the time because they make such a mess. And I just wondered if there's a way to cut the leaves off and throw them in the garage or something for the winter.
No, what you did last year was brilliant. Too bad. You can't do that again, huh?
No, I'm renting my apartment this time.
So these are hanging baskets, like ferns in a hanging basket? Oh, yeah, I know. They're messy. But if you can hang them in a bathroom or in one of your more humid parts of the home, so kitchens, bathrooms tend to be the most humid, then that's what you should do. And you're right. You've got to comb out all the yellow and brown stuff before you bring them in. Then you're going to water them thoroughly before you bring them in. And then, keeping them out of drafts, high humidity, watered, not soaking wet, but, you know, consistently watered. They are they add a real lovely ambiance to a home, but they are a bit of work for sure.
Yeah, that they are. Their leaves constantly fall, so
they do. They are a bit messy.
Yeah. Well, that's all I wanted to know. I just was hoping you had a solution for me.
Make them go dormant. You can't. They are never dormant. Yeah, you can't just shut them down. You've got to let them do their thing. They will slow down for the winter. Yeah, it's just the cooler you keep them, you know, if you had a bedroom you don't use that's bright.
Right.
And, yeah, you could a couple of fern stands and just let them be there and shake them every now and then and sweep up the debris.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Good luck on that, Kathy. Yeah. We like our ferns for sure.
Sorry, yeah.
Okay. Let's go to Hildy in Toronto. Hildy, welcome to the Garden Show.
Good morning. Thank you. Nice to be back. I have a question regarding a pest that I have found. I called about it before, but we didn't get to what it actually was. Was leaf miner.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and it creates little tunnels in between the upper and lower leaf surface. And I wonder, where do they come from, and how do I really, other than cutting off, like mostly on spider plants, I have been ripping off the leaves of the spider plants where there is damage. So that I thought, well, if I get rid of what's inside, you know, maybe they'll stop. So I think it's had a good effect. But it's not completely gone, and I'm still pulling off tips of spider plant leaves. Wow. Where do they come from? How do you get rid of them without ripping apart the plant?
Well, that's the thing, is you can't. I find that interesting. So on your spider plants, I've never seen leaf miner on spider plants.
Yeah, well, I'll be happy to show them to you.
Take pictures.
Yeah,
well, you know why. For anybody who's
so
listening.
Spiders and any kind of, like, not Swedish. What do I have here? Anyways, I can't think of the Latin name. They're on spider plants, and that's about the worst damage, yes.
Right. So the thing with spider plants is they have a long, narrow leaf. Usually the ones we grow in our homes are variegated, so green and white. And so it would be hard to see leaf miner damage in a spider plant leaf, I would think. Usually,
you can see it because it's blotched on the upper surface and on the lower surface. You can see that little thing. And there's a little black frost or bugs, I don't know, that's on the lower surface of the leaf.
So if you've got leaf miners, they are inside the leaf, and when they poop, like if you hold the leaf up to a window, it's like a stained glass window. They have eaten out the inside of the leaf. The upper and lower surface are intact, and inside is hollow or empty, but you'll see little tiny black grains of insect poop inside the hollowed out leaf. So
but
you'll
not,
know it's
well,
leaf
I
miner.
See them on the outside because I can't see that closely on the inside of the leaf. It's just a dead space in the leaf, and it has little black frass or whatever speckled on the outside.
Okay, so
and
that
sometimes
doesn't
little
sound
black
like
there is moving on the outside, on the underside of the leaf usually.
All right, so
mystery.
It doesn't. If there's black poop on the outside of the leaf, it's not leaf miner. It could be something else like scale. Spider plants get scale like crazy.
No, it's not scale.
Bottom line is, because we're just going to run out of time on the show, bottom line is the plants you have, I would probably destroy those spider plants. You're not going to eliminate the pests. The spider plants are a dime a dozen. I'm sure you can get, I can mail you some baby spider plants right now, and so you can start
thank
again.
You.
Like it's. So,
thank you, Charlie. I can get them, and I have actually replaced all the spiders with new ones, but the new ones seem to get it as well. Yeah,
right, but you need to eliminate the plants with the evidence of an infestation from your home before you bring any new plants in. So, and when you bring in new plants, you quarantine them for at least 2 weeks, keeping them separate from your other plants. So, because these insects will jump around, fly around, get around. How do they do it? They come in on the soil. They'll travel on your body as you walk around your house. There's ways. Insects are very clever that way. So, I would, like I say, get new, like, Leave the infested spider plants outside. They will die in the frost, and all the pests will also will die in the frost. So they'll be gone and start again. All right?
Okay, and there we have it. Yeah, yeah. And you have a great trip. Yeah, you have a great trip. And as you mentioned earlier on the show, the next 2 weeks will be recorded shows, which we'll be replaying because you'll be in Hawaii.
I will. Thank you so much, Dean. Thanks, Carlos. Great calls from everybody. See you all again in 3 weeks.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.